We call it the code of silence, and it is the best kept family secret for a number of reasons. Sometimes culturally, people are afraid of shaming their own families or their extended families. In other situations, fear of retaliation by the partner if the incident is disclosed is also a concern. And lastly, a number of women are extremely afraid of leaving the situation for a variety of very complicated reasons, notwithstanding the fact that they will suffer an economic loss when they leave the home.
Does it tend to be a problem that cuts across all social, religious, and ethnic strata?
Domestic violence touches everyone. It doesn't matter what your class or your earning capacity or your educational level or your race or ethnicity. We statistically see it cutting across all of society.
I gather, though, that the number of assaults has decreased over the past 25 years, if the surveys are to be believed. Why is that?
Well, I'm not sure that the trend data for us in the United States, domestic violence really was not a concern and on the front page of the newspapers until about 1970, when the term domestic violence was actually coined here in the U.S. And I think there's been an extreme interest on the part of the government of the United States in terms of enacting federal legislation to not only provide financial support for programs that can intervene and assist victims as well as perpetrators, but I also believe that people are more likely to disclose because they have a safe haven to go to, and because as a body of people, we become more familiar with what the warning signs are. And indeed, the church itself in the U.S., the bishops themselves, have actually issued a pastoral on domestic violence and, in fact, have encouraged parishes and lay ministers to become involved in assisting victims.
What is the most common types of abuse that are suffered by victims?
Well, the common most reported types of abuse, the ones that we see most often, are certainly physical, but I would submit to you that long-term emotional abuse is almost a constant factor in every single case of domestic violence. So the breaking down of the person as an individual first, followed by violent behavior, is the tendency. The most underreported type of domestic violence is, in fact, sexual assault or rape of a partner.
Is that quite common?
About 75,000 women are raped each year, and about 25% of that is by a partner spouse.
How many women who suffer domestic violence suffer in silence rather than seeking help? Do we have any percentages on this?
I actually don't have percentages on that. We believe that because it's such a long-term process for a person who's been a victim to actually come forward, that the numbers could be quite staggering. Unfortunately, the family violence here is one of the number one concerns in our country.
What is the typical identikit of a violent spouse or partner, if there is such a thing?
Not sure I could put together a conclusive profile, but I can give you some of the early warning signs. An extremely controlling person, a person who does not trust easily. Certainly, one of the indicators is if the person themselves grew up in a family where there had been violence. We know from the data that if you grew up in a family where there was domestic violence, you're more than likely to actually be a perpetrator sometime in your lifetime.
So this must be having a very negative impact on children. Not only could they be growing up to become abusers in turn, but presumably also on their psychological development in general, perhaps their achievements at school.
Certainly. I think that when a child watches the two people that brought them into the world and has loved and nurtured them actually be in a combative relationship, which results in one or both of them actually being exposed to violence, that at a minimal, that child has experienced emotional abuse. And statistically, we know that more than a third of children who are in violent homes where the adults are perpetrating against each other, that those children themselves will become victims of abuse at some time in that chaotic relationship.
And how does Catholic charities help victims of domestic abuse?
Well, we have a number of our Catholic charities agencies across the country who have become very involved in the domestic violence movement. Many of the state governments in the U.S. have formed domestic violence councils. Catholic charities organizations are very involved in that. And many of our local agencies actually run programs both for the victims in sheltering and providing counseling and in providing intervention with the batterers. They're very involved also with the court systems because as a result of legislation in this country, domestic violence is in fact a felony now in most states. And we are very involved in working with the courts in trying to eliminate the abuse, protect the victim, and help the batterer actually overcome whatever their psychological reasons are for battering.
Have you come across, you know, some horrific domestic abuse situations? And if so, could you share with us an anecdote of such a situation, whether it's poignant or uplifting, tragic, or whatever?
This is a story, actually, from a victim when I worked in the Archdiocese of Detroit. She's actually published her story. She is a physician. And so this is a well-educated woman who, in fact, was a prisoner emotionally in her own home. And for many, many years suffered severe physical violence from her spouse. She had children, and they were also victims because they observed this violence. One of the questions that many people ask is, why would somebody who's suffering such horrific violence, why wouldn't they leave that situation, especially someone who has a good education and obviously could support themselves on their own? It's very hard for a person to untie those ties. The other comment that she made in her story was, at least if she was in the home with him, she knew what he was up to. But if she, in fact, took a stand of no violence, and he, in fact, was put out of the home, she would have no idea of where he would be or where he might contact her at. And as you know, there's been national and international stories about former spouses and partners who, in fact, have stalked their victims after the relationship has ended. So her concern was, in leaving the relationship, that she would lose some of the control in the sense that she wouldn't know what this person was up to. And because of the situation she was in where his behavior was rage, she was very afraid for herself and her children. And so what she did was, over a long period of time, make plans to leave, to go to a safe environment. And she made them very methodically, in a way that he couldn't find her. And that's one of the things that victims really have to do. They have to devise a plan that's going to ensure the safety of them and their children. Without that plan for safety, they perhaps can even be at greater risk. Because in many cases, when the person left and that person found them again, there was an incident where a former spouse walked into a classroom in this country with a gun, and in front of her students, this woman's students, his former wife's students, shot her to death. So even when a person leaves the situation, it isn't over for them, and it's a long, long process of healing and making sure that they themselves and their children are going to be safe.